Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, pushing for better diversity and inclusion is hugely important in every industry. A 2018 report from charity Stonewall found that due to their sexuality, 18% of the UK's LGBTQ plus workers had been negatively targeted by colleagues. And the agricultural industry is no different. In fact, it can come with a whole stack of its own specific challenges. Farming can be a lonely and high-pressure business. The UK Office for National Statistics says suicide rates in farmers are among the highest in any occupational group already. And every year, 50 gay farmers take their own lives, with the fear of coming out as one of the main reasons. This tragedy simply can't continue. Apart from the sheer destructiveness of prejudice, there are a huge amount of potential benefits to making the agricultural sector more diverse. So, through the lens of LGBTQ plus farmers, we're going to explore diversity in agriculture. And with me to discuss this is the fantastic Amy Burke, Inclusivity Programme Manager at the Institute of Grocery Distribution. Hello there, Amy.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really, really good. I'm very, very happy to have you here on the podcast. But I just wanted to start by saying, why did you want to come on the podcast today? Why is this such an important topic to you?
Well, firstly, thank you for allowing this platform for people to talk about such serious issues, especially some of the statistics that you mentioned at the beginning. It's quite shocking, and it needs to be, the messages need to be elevated and addressed, really. I think why I want to be here, it really aligns with my purpose. I'm very, very passionate about all things LGBT. I'm a lesbian, and I have been, I think, most of my life. But I've worked in the agricultural industry for well over 15 years. And for about 8 to 10 of those years, I didn't talk about my sexuality at all. I just kept it secret, basically lived a double life, which caused a lot of oppression within myself. And to be honest with you, I don't want anybody else to ever go through some of the situations that I went through. And so I now sit and work with AgRespect, which is a social committee for LGBTQ plus people in the agricultural industry, to help make change happen, share knowledge. The more we can understand ourselves, more we can understand each other and empathise. So I'm really here to share knowledge and help create action.
So some of the statistics, I mean, I was horrified by the statistics that I mentioned in the introduction, but that's the tip of the iceberg, I guess, isn't it? The route to getting to that stage of desperation means that there's a whole bundle of problems that have occurred, and a lot of them that don't result in that. So many people must be dealing with these things. It's not just avoiding the tragedies, it's also for the benefit of people as well. I mean, if we raised awareness and had a decent diversity and equality in agriculture, what would this do for farmers and for society as a whole?
I think this is just a general moral compass of everybody being able to be their true self. You know, as I mentioned about myself being oppressed for so many years and the impact that's had, why can't people just be themselves? What does it matter who you are in love with, what you are behind closed doors, to the what you're doing in your day job? So I think everybody should be able to be their true self in every aspect. And I think we need to encourage equality, because particularly in our industry, we have an issue with attracting people into working in agriculture. So if we had this industry where everybody is truly inclusive, then we'd attract people in, but also we would retain people. The amount of individuals that I've seen leave the industry because they've either had some form of discrimination or they've been up against not being able to be the true self. Whereas actually, if we really do look after our employees, our workforce, then we will have a great retention rate. I think, like you mentioned, we have the highest rate of mental ill health in farming. I think there's ridiculous statistics out there, and we need to really focus on that in ensuring that people can really just that authenticity of not having to worry about anything else other than coming to work or going about your daily life without worrying and having that weight on your shoulder. So I think raising awareness about equality is essential.
Yeah. So I haven't worked in agriculture. So it's an area that is particularly difficult. Is it because it's a relatively male-dominated area? That doesn't quite make sense, because that you could be gay and it doesn't mean male or female. Is it particularly that it's a rural and less sort of modernised sort of culture? Why in agriculture specifically? What's the problem there, do you feel?
So I'll be honest with you, because I work in food and drink industry, and I've also done some support work in construction. And I'll be honest, agriculture's not special. It's, you know, every industry you work in, there are challenges, let's say, around, you know, being a gay man, especially in construction. But agriculture has so many extra challenges that I don't really see in other industries. It's an extremely isolated industry. Mm-hmm. Particularly if you're in a rural community, maybe sat on a tractor for 12 hours a day, not really got anybody else to talk to about what's going on in your head. So you've got that in its own. You have this legacy. So I'm not from a farming background. And I remember when I first came and started working in farming, there was this sort of legacy piece of, I hand my farm down to the next generation. They need to do me proud. And so that's that weight on that shoulder of the next generation. Yeah, so I need to do what's been told. And also, you know, you look in the media, and Emmerdale, for example, you know, it's quite farming in Emmerdale, and what you see is, you know, male and female heterosexual relationships. And so you look at that and think, well, that's not what I am. So you don't see it, so you think that you're abnormal. And I think that's something that we really need to focus on, is actually representation in the industry. Is, I know people think if you can't see it, you can't be it. So when I first started my career, I never saw a single lesbian. And even now, there's a few of us, but there's some. But if you can't see other lesbians, then you might think, well, that's not really an industry I want to go and work in.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
if you're in that industry, you think, well, no one else is a lesbian. I must be very, very odd. So I can't be my true self. So I think there's a lot of external challenges that the industry faces. But I do want to emphasise, it's not, you know, a one-off. There's other industries, and actually we can learn lessons from other industries in that way, especially construction.
And I guess we think of rural communities as very traditional, and agriculture is very traditional, and that tradition is often, you know, unreconstructed in views. But that's not necessarily the case. I mean, because farming these days, younger farmers are, you know, they're dynamic. It's not just sort of an old person leaning on their shepherd's crook in the corner of a field. It's younger people. And as you say, we need younger people in agriculture to be able to carry on. Now, Amy, you've spoken openly about your own experience. I appreciate that it hasn't been in agriculture, but you know, you're working in this industry now nonetheless. You've shared that you still don't always feel comfortable within your profession, and that you've had to work hard to prove yourself. Tell us a bit more about that and about that sort of experience and that journey.
So I think for me, that the issue I have is that we're all diverse. So sometimes I face some form of discrimination from individuals who feel that they are not diverse at all. But actually, we all are diverse. I think the more we understand our own diversities, the more we can empathise with each other. So particularly for me, I've always thought that I've still got that fear of rejection. So if I talk to somebody and say I'm a lesbian, I've got that fear that somebody's going to go, oh, you know, like, I don't know, just some fear of rejection around that. And you know, for the listeners that are sat there at the moment, I would imagine that every single person has felt a sense that they didn't belong, not necessarily sexuality, but there'll be some form of I don't fit in or felt discriminated in one way or another.
Yeah.
And I think it's really important that everybody thinks about that moment where they felt that discrimination, where they felt, you know, that in that room they didn't belong. And when you've had that feeling, remember that and think, oh, I don't want anybody else to feel like that. And so when you're about to make a judgment, an assumption or a comment, think about that feeling and just hold it for a second. Because that, you know, that could be a family member, a really close friend that you're going to make that comment to, that could have a long-term impact. So you talked at the beginning about the huge rates of suicide, which is an issue that's really close to my heart. So we're currently in Pride Month, and there'll be people who are sat at home who would think they're better off not on this earth than actually confronting and talking about it because of a comment that someone's made. So just always remember that before you make a comment.
So
my experience, really, I'm a lot more confident now about talking about it. And I think it's really, really important that we do talk about it. And you mentioned about young farmers coming through and being more open about this stuff. We have some fantastic AgRespect committee members who are young. So Emily Brown, very young, and showing and leading the way of, you know, let's be open about who we truly are, because look what can happen. And it opens doors. So I think it's really important that we do encourage that, and especially for the next generation, and helping them to build their confidence sooner in their career instead of waiting till, I mean, I'm not old, but, you know, but instead of waiting, you know, 15, 20 years into your career and then finally being confident, imagine the impact it can have if you were confident younger and how much movement you could actually do.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you've also suggested that rural communities need to get better at talking about the soft stuff. What do you mean by soft stuff? And what do you think prevents these discussions happening?
So soft stuff is purely communication. I've worked for, as I say, 15 years in the industry. One of the roles I did was leadership with farms across the UK. And this was really looking at, everybody thinks leadership and they think of, I don't know, Barack Obama or all these great leaders, but actually we're all leaders in ourselves. And some of the soft stuff that you need to do as a leader is empathetic skills, is great communication, is really understanding, you know, how to get the best out of every individual within your team, within your family, within your friends. So the soft stuff is communication. How do people like to be communicated to? How do we all interact differently? And that's the same with sort of the LGBT. So if I know I keep talking about workforce, but, you know, you can be for any sort of conversation that you have.
Yeah.
Is don't make assumptions, just talk to people and really understand them, because stories make us who we are. And if you ask people questions, it's curiosity over judgment. So instead of judging a person and saying, oh, I didn't realise you've got a boyfriend instead of a girlfriend. You know, ask the questions, oh, okay, you've got a boyfriend, that's great, how did you meet? It's a totally different conversation, and the impact that you'll have on that individual will be, you know, it'll be more positive as opposed to that judgment instead of curiosity.
Yeah. I have to say, I'm still baffled that anyone can be negative about somebody being in love with somebody else. You know, love is a rare and wonderful thing enough already. Why? I don't get that there can be a problem. I know that's a simplistic way about it because people are complicated but it baffles me. Now, okay, let's talk about some of the work that you're doing, because you're inclusivity program manager at the IGD, where you run a reverse mentoring program for the FMCG industry. Tell us a bit about that. How does it work? Can you change, you know, because you're talking about people's attitudes, how do you go about trying to shift things?
That's a brilliant question. So, one of the biggest things that I've learned in this role is you can't change people. So don't try to, you know, those people in the room that really don't want to be changed, don't try and change them. The best thing to do is try and inspire them, because actually it's a deeper behavioural change if you inspire them as opposed to saying, you must do this, it just won't work.
Harder work though to inspire rather than to attack, I guess.
Of course, but it's a bigger reward as well.
Yeah.
So my role really is to help inspire senior leaders within the food and drink industry to create workplaces where everyone can thrive. So we do this as a reverse mentoring program. And the reason we talk about senior leaders and them being our main target audience is because they can create the change at pace and at scale. So instead of going at the operational level, so people like myself who are really passionate about it, it would take years and years to create that change. Whereas if we look at, you know, CEOs and C-suite managing directors within these businesses, they can actually put the action in place. They've got the gravitas behind them. And actually, I love what I do. I'm so, so passionate about it. The products that I actually eat, so the drinks and the food that I enjoy the most, and the people that are behind creating those products actually care, actually engage in inclusion and diversity. And that's the biggest reward for me, is that they genuinely care. So reverse mentoring is you take the senior leader who typically would have normally been a mentor. They, you know, they've got their experience, have a career progression and they can share that knowledge. We switch it around and we put them into a mentee role. So they're there to learn from somebody else. They want to, you know, be inspired, etc. And then we take somebody from an underrepresented group. So they might be from LGBT, they might be from neurodiversity, or it might be a single mother. You know, it's a wide-ranging, broad spectrum. But we take them and they are then the mentor. So they've got knowledge to share with the mentee. And they also then get their voice empowered. They're able to create change. And between the two, it's amazing to watch it sort of happen.
It sounds extraordinary.
It's only a three-month program. The reason being, it's short because we want to create that psychologically safe space quite quickly, that they can then, you know, listen to each other, learn from each other, and create change. And, you know, over the last 2 years we've been running it, we've seen some real, genuine, tangible actions, and that's what's important.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. So that sounds like a great program. What else needs to be done and what can be done? Is it more initiatives? Is it raising awareness, more support, or just people being flipping nicer to each other?
All of the above. So I call it the triple A. So whenever I talk about this, I say the way we can make change happen is triple A. So firstly, awareness. So podcasts like today, where you're sharing knowledge and you're really understanding what does it all mean. Remember when I was talking about we're all diverse within ourselves. So how do we know more about our own diversity to then understand, you know, when you start to realise, oh, actually, the diet that I have, it makes me diverse and I don't want people to judge me on that. Then you understand why people are different in themselves. So really that awareness piece is where it starts. The second A is acknowledge. So really acknowledging what's going on, understanding what the whole diversity and inclusion landscape looks like, but without feeling that you need to go and do a PhD in it. So people don't want you to know everything. They just want to know you care. And that's the most important thing. So acknowledgement is stopping and listening, asking the stories, etc. And the third A, of course, is action. And I believe, particularly in the agricultural industry, action is needed in a collaborative way. It's such a huge, massive issue that I think is going to be the biggest challenge that we face going forward, that we need to come together collaboratively. One person is not going to be able to do it. I believe we're all individually accountable, but we all need to come together to actually create that action. So I think, as you say, there should be some new initiatives. I think there needs to be more funding from the government, particularly on the mental health area. You know, the statistics that you said at the beginning, quite frankly, disgusting, aren't they? It's not acceptable. We need to stop that now. But the more we come together, the more we can understand, actually, this is going to work. And learning from other industries. So what's happening in construction, for example? They've really turned a corner on this. So what can we learn that will work in agriculture? So I think that's, you know, just a simple way to fix it all, really.
Yeah, I like your three A's. That makes sense. So how can our listeners make a difference? I mean, many of the people that listen to this podcast work in the food industry, a fair amount of execs in the food industry as well. Some people just about to and just wanting to move into the industry. What can they do to make a difference? You've mentioned a couple of things, just talking to somebody and saying, oh, how did you meet? So that's which goes beyond my idea of, well, who cares who loves who? Because you're saying, no, do care. But be positive about it, which I like. It's a very different way to the way that I thought. What else can people do if they're already working in the food industry to help?
Well, obviously, I'm going to say join reverse mentoring because it's a free program and it does really create that sort of light bulb moment of what it all means. Listening to other people's stories is so much more compounding than going and reading, you know, 101 on diversity and inclusion. Yeah. So, of course, I'm going to do a plug for reverse mentoring. I think there's a lot of charities out there as well. You know, there's things like Stonewall, there's Mind and Shout, and obviously AgRespect, which is the social platform. We can learn from these charities. They provide resources themselves. But I think if everyone can just take that one action away, I think it all comes back down to the curiosity over judgment. So take the time to just ask somebody a question. You know, you never know what sits behind somebody's thoughts or eyes. And instead of saying, how are you? It's how are you? How are you? You know, ask it twice. There's different people ask it in different ways. So I know a friend of mine, Ollie Harrison, asks on a percentage, what, how are you? I know there's other people who say, out of 10, how are you? But it's just it's a simple question to you. It takes you 2 minutes to ask that question, but you could have such an impact on that person you're asking the question to. So I think there's all the charities, there's lots of programs out there. I've got heaps of resources that I'm more than happy to share completely free. But just stop for a second and ask somebody how they are. And just be kind. I think you said it. Just be flipping nice and we'll all get along very well.
Yeah, absolutely. Give us a nice big plug for the IGD's reverse mentoring project. Where would people find out about that?
So if you go on to IGD.com and put in reverse mentoring, it'll come up. We've got one more intake. So we only run 5 intakes in the year. There's only one more left. So be quick, and it's in October. But yeah, you can find me on LinkedIn and just drop me a message. And my role is to help support people to create these inclusive workplaces. So, you know, work me hard, get your money's worth out of me.
Excellent. Okay, well, we'll include relevant links and phone numbers in the podcast description, including the ones you've mentioned, and also the Samaritans for anyone affected by the issues raised in this podcast. So, Amy Burke, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, there are hundreds more at foodmatterslive.com. And remember, if you enjoyed the Food Matters Live podcast, you can subscribe via preferred platform. And if you feel inclined, why not leave us a review? And thank you so much for listening.